You're listening to All Things Cage at Wave Farms WGXC 90.7 FM Radio for Open Ears. I'm your host, Laura Kuhn, director of the John Cage Trust, and tonight's program will focus on John Cage's Overpopulation and Art, a marvelous performance text piece composed in 1991. As John Cage set out to write this piece, a lengthy misostic text that he would present at Stanford University's Here Comes Everybody, The Music, Poetry, and Art of John Cage on January 28th and 30th, 1992, one of his last public appearances, he reached out to his friend Esther Ferrer with a question: what is the future of anarchy? Now, Esther Ferrer is a self-described anarchist, as well as a remarkable performance artist, the longtime partner of the composer, writer, and critic Tom Johnson, who from 1972 to 1982 wrote for The Village Voice. John Cage and Esther Ferrer had been together off and on for years. She was a performer in Cage's Alla Ricerca del Silenzio Perduto, subtitled Three Excursions in a Prepared Train, Variations on a Theme by Tito Gatti by John Cage, with the assistance of Juan Hidalgo and Walter Marchetti. As Cage explains, its three movements are to be listed on programs of announcements, each with its own date, destination, timetable, and stops, in such a way as to suggest a musical work. The pieces, known familiarly as Il Treno, referring to the prepared train carrying performers that hop on and off the train at various stops throughout its three excursions in and around Bologna, part of the Festa Musicale d'Estate a Bologna that took place June 26 to 30, 1978. John Cage and Esther Ferrer became fast friends, and she would conduct a memorable and quite lively interview with Cage the following year at the Festival d'Automne, where Cage was performing with the Merce Cunningham Dance Company, along with Martin Kalbe, Takahisa Kosugi, and David Tudor. Esther Ferrer's reply to John Cage's question, a lengthy typewritten letter dated 1991, follows. I'll read it, but you can find it in print online at Andrew Culver's marvelous website, anarchicharmony.org. It was also published in Music Works, number 62, summer 1995, a wonderful new music periodical out of Vancouver that was launched in 1978 by Andrew Timar and John Oswald. Cage's Overpopulation and Art was published after Cage's death by the University of Chicago Press in 1994 as John Cage Composed in America, being an anthology of the proceedings from the Stanford Festival Symposium, edited by Marjorie Perloff and Charles Junkerman. John Cage, as most know, was long interested in anarchy. For him, not a destructive, volatile, historic movement, but rather a state of being, having far more to do with personal responsibility and creative, constructive behavior, with roots in the ideas of the New England Transcendentalists, especially Henry David Thoreau. In January 1988, 3 years before he embarked on his Overpopulation and Art, Cage would complete a lengthy text piece entitled Anarchy, which many of you may know, bringing together writings by such individuals as Emma Goldman, Walt Whitman, Peter Kropotkin, Mario Malatesta, Michael Bakunin, Albert Einstein, Buckminster Fuller, Norman O'Brown, and others, including bits of writings by Cage himself. Cage first performed this work on February 27, 1988, on the final day of John Cage at Wesleyan, a festival symposium about John Cage's work and influence, organized by his friend and colleague, Neely Bruce. He would go on to perform Anarchy several more times that year, in fairly quick succession, at the North American New Music Festival at SUNY Buffalo on March 14th, at a Meet the Composer Mid-America Arts Alliance program on April 28th, at the 8th Almeida Festival of Contemporary Music and Performance in London on June 19th, and finally at Cooper Union in New York City on November 9th. Anarchy would be published in book form nearly a decade after Cage's death in 2001 by Wesleyan University Press. Do return to All Things Cage next week for a program devoted to it. While Cage's Overpopulation in Art is written in misostic form, it is not composed from a source text, as is often the case with misostics, but rather is through-composed. It is therefore more sensical than you might anticipate. Like much of his mature work, however, it is remarkably prescient, recognizably so at the present moment. It's also sometimes very funny. Now, on to Esther Ferrer's letter to John Cage. Querido John, here are some quick thoughts to respond to your question as to the future of anarchism. For me, anarchism shall always have a future and a present, for the basic reason that I associate it with creativity. Please, I don't mean art, which is something else, much more limited. I am talking about creativity in the sense that it comes from rejoicing, from pleasure, and it serves first of all the person who practices it without paying attention to the consequences and without feeling obligations to anyone else. There is no master except oneself. Anarchy, like creativity, is thus a completely gratuitous choice which engages only yourself and which you decided to practice. One could well define anarchy as a practice of liberty, first individual and then social. One can practice it alone, even if others are not at all interested. That is often the case when one speaks of anarchism. Others laugh or mistrust the idea, but that does not take away from one's own joy. This is to say that anarchistic thought is something out of time, even without time. And I would even dare to say that it is something anchored in human nature. There are other things anchored in human nature also, unfortunately. And like creativity, individualistic and individualized. This is the source of its attractiveness and of its enormous risk, which, in my opinion, makes it all the more attractive. As a result, John, I think that in periods of desanimo or desesperanza, as today, when there is not, or seems not to be, any messianic hope to stuff our heads with, when the hopes have turned out to be largely inoperative, there is a return to essential things, and the essential things are never far away, because we can find them in ourselves. Without needing recourse to ideologists and master thinkers, without needing to think outside of ourselves. Our liberty is only limited by the characteristics of our species in the most physical sense, and by the personal decision to employ liberty intelligently, that is, to consider others as beings who practice liberty too. Esther Ferrer adds a footnote here for the words desanimo and desesperanza. She writes, desanimo, Spanish term meaning without soul, without force or courage. Desaliento, meaning without breath, is a synonym. When someone dies, one says, dio su último aliento, he expelled his last breath. All these meanings are included in the term. Anarchy is quite simply a problem of assuming individual responsibility. It is the idea that each person conceive of himself as a thinking being, capable of making his life decisions without delegating his decision-making capacities to someone else, whether it be a god, a king, a state, a party, an ingenious artist, a master of thought, a leader, a mother or a father. Now, to be more specific, for me, John, anarchy really does have the future that people are talking about, and for a reason much more concrete than the one fundamental for me, which I spoke about before, that is, creative conduct, as opposed to subordinate conduct and positive individualism. In these times, which flow in a behavioral grisette, it is no doubt attractive to follow a way of thinking that does not demand anything, that simply proposes the possibility that you have the courage to assume the decision and the consequences of your own acts without protecting yourself in the imperatives of an ideology, a religion, or an authority, which convert you into an irresponsible person, first in regard to yourself, and then in regard to society. Esther Ferrer footnotes the word grisette here. She says, it's as if it is a drawing in gray with just a few touches of white. I like this very much in the field of art, but absolutely not in social intercourse. In view of the unworkability of all the doctrines that claim to liberate humanity, such as capitalism, Marxism, or authoritative socialism, the big loser of all the revolutions, Soviet, without forgetting Kronstadt, Spanish, etc., that is, anarchism, seems for many to be once again a possibility. As the Basque sculptor Jorge Oteiza used to say to me, from failure to failure, right up to the final victory. Of course, that this possibility could become another fashion, another fad, is a new risk that anarchists must assume. Esther Ferrer adds a third footnote to this entire paragraph. She writes, the anarchists predicted this failure even before their expulsion from L'Internationale in the Fifth Congress in The Hague in 1872, when they argued directly to Marx that a proletarian state was as bad as a bourgeois state, and that to accept the principle of authority of the state was political tyranny. Any state would, by its own dynamic, develop into a suffocating dictatorial bureaucracy and would produce an enormous load of doctrinal and dogmatic thinking. They were right. Where there is power, there is violence and coercion, wrote Kropotkin. Why is anarchy a possibility? Because we begin to understand that we have delegated too much, believed too much in the daddy state, which protects us and gives us such security, or the delusion of it, and puts us to sleep in the best cases, or which exploits us in the worst, and unfortunately, more frequent cases. The daddy state also puts to sleep our capacity to think, to revolt, to manage our lives, because it promises everything and gives us practically nothing. Maybe it is easier and even more comfortable to delegate than to think. Anarchism, in the face of all the other doctrines and ideologies, is a marvelous exception. It promises nothing. Wow, what joy! It gives us no model of pleasure to follow, to go for. It gives us no paradise, neither an artificial one, nor a real one, nor a proletarian one, at the end of an authoritative road. This is because, among other things, there is no road. Machado, a Spanish poet, exiled by the forces of General Franco, and who died in exile, has written, Caminante no hay camino, se hace camino al andar. Walker, there is no road. The road is made by walking. So, from this struggle against the state, which does not mean the conquest of power, but rather its dispersion, anarchy struggles against the patriarchal family, of which the state is only one manifestation. Even if anarchist writing, with rare exceptions, make no reference to women, and even if, in their habitual behavior, some of the great anarchist theoreticians were misogynist and authoritative. The term patriarchal really means hierarchical pyramidal structure, in which the summit is occupied by a supreme authority, traditionally masculine. Given that one of the goals of feminism is to decompose the patriarchal family, and not, if you please, to replace it by a matriarchal authority, in this sense, the various feminist movements can stimulate and actualize, thanks to women anarchists, some anarchistic ideas. These ideas, John, at bottom, are simply natural creations of free thought, capable of generating someday a fraternity and solidarity, conflictive, I hope. Anarchy does not fear contradictions. She is submerged in them, but capable of inventing imaginative and joyful solutions. Before we listen to John Cage's Overpopulation and Art, which, to recap, he presented in January 1992 at an interdisciplinary conference at Stanford University, here comes Everybody, the Music, Poetry, and Art of John Cage. Let me say something about its close. While I've tidied up the sound quality of most of the live recording we hold in the John Cage Trust archives that we'll be listening to, I have chosen to leave the Q&A intact at the close, despite the fact that the questions from the audience are mostly inaudible. Cage's answers are mostly not, however, and they're rather charming. But there's also something quite memorable that happened at the close of that performance, which I'm not sure you'll hear. At the close of Cage's reading, halfway through the questions from the audience, he was admonished by one particular questioner for not tackling what he felt were the larger problems of our global life. Cage faltered in his reply to this question, and he struggled to find words to reply. He finally regained his composure, however, and replied somewhat awkwardly, mumbling uncharacteristically, saying something to the effect that he had tried to put something positive forward, something that might give us hope. All the while, he was gathering his things and turning to exit the stage. This was somewhat sad, I have to say. Cage had a full schedule the week of this conference, entwined as it was with his usual annual week of work on visual artworks at Crown Point Press, and he didn't feel well. But as he began to depart, his back to the audience, another person asked loudly whether he would consider a nomination for president. Cage was even more dismayed by this question, although it made him stammer no in reply, which made everyone laugh. Ultimately, he left the stage to resounding applause. Now on to John Cage performing Overpopulation and Art.
About 1948 or 50, the number of people living all at once equaled the number who had ever lived at any time, all added together. The present, as far as numbers go, became equal to the past. We are now in the future. It is something else. Has it doubled? Has it quadrupled? All we now know for sure is the dead are in the minority. They are outnumbered by us who are living. What does this do to our way of communicating? Mails rarely from people we know. I spend time saving it to send it to Wesleyan, Northwestern, or Santa Cruz. For fungi and arts, a picture's thus given of this moment in history, ephemera give it. Rest of the mail's bureaucratic fundraising by institutions concerned with health and environment, human rights, etc. 3 copies of the same document, contribution re-requests, bureaucratic inefficiency glaringly exhibited, all thrown away, triplicate stamped envelopes included. Phone rings, reviving practice of Buddhism, practice, whether sentient or non-sentient, practice of Buddhism, the general outlines of every being, including the telephone, is the Buddha, is world honored, is answered, is thee, is of, is emptiness fullness, all of creation, endless interpenetration, together with non-obstruction. Of what avail, then, the use of answering service, attempt to free oneself from interruption, solitude for just a moment regained, is utterly, finally lost, finding 19th, not 21st, in 20th century. Are you into fax and electronic mail? Are you in touch, HCE? We live in glass houses, our vitric surroundings, transparent, reflective, putting images outside in space of what's inside our homes. Everything's as multiplied as we are. Each moment is magic. We have no idea what's being seen or heard. The quantity is beyond count. The quality is ready-made art. This demonstrates validity of those works of art in which no place is more important than another. Beauty at all points. If it doesn't click, Wittgenstein, take a clicker from your pocket and click it. Transform your perception of it, of whatever, no matter what the name, what the artist's name, no need for balance, harmony, contrast, climax. In this situation, what's the artist's proper behavior? Self-expression? Or should he put himself aside, so to speak, change himself, asking questions instead of following laws, or making an attempt after breaking them to establish yet another or others? Getting rid of the principles of law, of control, increasing world and life enjoyment seems more radical, removal of the likes and dislikes, chance operations, wanting to get a taxi, avoiding a gentleman on the corner who was there ahead of me. I separated my problem from his by going to the opposite side of the street. Just as I hailed an empty cab, I was surprised. The gentleman rushed ahead of me and actually got in the cab without even a remark. I don't know whether he happened to see, but another cab picked me up before he was out of sight. What are some of the various eventualities in a changed society? No government. Keeping education in first place, keeping it, that is, for you to give to yourself. Increase of unemployment until we are all self-employed, self-taught, self-governed. A way not just to say anarchy, but to do it. Forget the politicians, they are on the moon. When they saw we were no longer voting, they left. Not bothering with money, preferring credit. Credit's electronic. No person need be without it. But who'll do all the work? Those who do will have pleasure seeing their work actually carried out. Robots making robots. We have the next war mapped out for us to make the world safe for poverty, violation of laws made to protect the rich, while there's still government, pass laws based on the needs of the poor, give them shelter, squatting privileges, change the economic structure of society out of profit and ownership into use. The police walled up the doors and windows. The house is again not used, and the people are still homeless. Mayor said, evict the squat. The police did it brutally. A house was empty. We restored it, filled space with life, concerts, discussions, people's kitchen, libraries. Nobody gets money for her or his work. A non-profit basis, changes of behavior, discussions about sex, overcoming repressive structures, having no need for art, pleased with what I see, pleased with what I hear, surrounded by multiplicity. He said he could imagine a world without art and that it wasn't bad. Artlessness, the sound of traffic, an instance of silence, the sound of traffic, the sound of traffic, an instance of silence. Phone rings, reviving practice of Christianity. Split the stick, split the stick, and there is Jesus, walking on the walking, on the writing, on the water as though nothing happened. The snow, the white animal asleep, safely asleep in the tree, no traces left. Reviving practice, whether meditation or non-meditation, pleased or displeased, won't burn, the metal ones won't burn, is a, is the, is of, is emptiness, fullness, practicality, all creation, endless interpenetration, whispered truths, the necessity to find new forms of living together, to stop the estrangement between us, to overcome the patriarchal thinking, the authoritarian structures, and the coldness, human not-togetherness. The necessity to develop a culture that consciously opposes the ruling culture, a culture which we create, we determine, which overcomes the passive consumer's attitudes, and which is not ruled by profiteering. Aesthetic spirit is as though visibility would not help, as though everything that is generally understood must stop. Only what one person alone understands helps all of us. How? What is not understood, a mystery, is now necessary, something we don't, of which we can't make head or tail. A music of variations without repetitions, an introduction to pleasure that has no need for proof or ideas or feelings, goal without goal. And what did I hear or see? I can't be sure. It was as if there was nothing on which to depend, as if there was nothing but in the presence of. Nikša Gligo wrote from Zagreb to say, the ugly Yugoslavian war is not between people. It has been brought about by that part of government and army that's concerned with Serbian power, Let our friends and all others know the truth. This is not ethnic, nor civil war, nor different ways of thinking. This is an imperialist political aggression. It's all happening in the heart of Europe at the end of the 20th century, possibly bringing about the total disappearance of Croatian state and people. What did you hear? The Pentagon giving up on the radio? Soldiers not to be paid, just discharged? 700,000? A great boon for unemployment. Do you think we'll finally see unemployment's what we've been working toward? Unemployment's self-employment. At last, we may be doing what we, the human race, could be doing, all of us. As he said, Suzuki said, there seems to be a tendency toward the good. Even though the future is already here, many are still living in the past. All governments are striking examples of what's out of date and inappropriate to our proper business, our evolution. Though there are more of us, all of us live in the same place, the planet Earth. There is no difference between what happens to some of us and what happens to the others. Whatever happens, happens to all of us. Our problems are not various. They are identical. The purifying of water and air, the provision of nourishing food, the delivery of it to places where it is needed or just desired, the providing of shelter, the availability of energy, whether it is needed, wherever it is needed. We have these problems in common. We can solve them all best without thinking of the division of the world into 153 separate nations, their separate powers mortally destructive. R. Buckminster Fuller called it killingry as opposed to livingry. Fuller is dead, but his spirit is now more than ever the spirit the world needs. It is alive. We have it in his work, his writings. Let us not forget we are now having to continue his work. In music, the absence of conductor, score, and bar line. Spaceship Earth, human needs and world resources, the two kept in balance, finding changing solutions for changing problems. The world game, teenagers, Fuller showed, can play it. In other words, intelligence is needed instead of politics or lawyers or even the United Nations. So, what's future's future? First, the world's prime vital problem is how to multiply by 3 swiftly, safely, and satisfyingly per pound, kilowatt, and man-hour, the overall performance realizations of the world's comprehensive resources. This will render those resources able to support 100% of humanity's increasing populace at levels of physical living far above whatever has been known or imagined. To satisfy the physical will bring us also undreamed-of metaphysical capabilities. Next, instead of ownership, individual 24-hour use of facilities, cars, cycles, paintings, hotels, telephones, museums, hospitals, libraries, restaurants, multiplying of value by time, if house is locked, honoring its use, later when house is free, opening a door with one of those flat computer-made keys, its time validity changed. And then, stopping the removal of fossil fuels from the earth, developing solar energy, developing pneumatic power, effects of light, air, etc., reserving oil and gas for a time when their use is needed in connection with the initiation of a future technique. Third, along with the removal of nations, the removal of schools, Ivan Illich's de-schooling society, putting the process of learning in the hands of the person who is doing it, computer facilities and ways to contact others, old or young, who share your interests, studios for every kind of art or research, in a word, utopia. We have only to make it work for every last one of us. We begin by believing it can be done, getting rid of pessimism, blindly clinging to optimism, in no sense doubting the possibility of utopia, but simply wanting to know the details of how it will happen. How does it begin and where? It will not happen politically. Fuller says it will arise due to mankind's vast wealth, industrial wealth, the tool-organized capability to take energies of the universe, which are transforming their patternings in various ways, as yet uncontrolled by man, so that they go through channels onto the ends of circularly arranged levers, which man invents, so that the energy turns wheels and shafts to do all the work. Universal energy is inexhaustible. Our knowledge only increases, as does our common wealth. In order to bring about continuous elevation of human dignity, we will be able to afford to give everyone student fellowships in any subjects they elect, Fuller's education automation. Everyone's going to study whatever he pleases. Man's not needed because of his ability to work as a slave. He's needed because of his ability to consume. The Chinese now have the most consumers. They'll eventually produce at the lowest prices. With that competition, we're going to be forced to go into total automation, full unemployment, only to find ourselves amazingly successful, wealth automated. Industries now world around. Picture of man that's now visibly developing is world man. World citizenship will not occur as a political initiative. It will be required by the economics of an exploding industrial world, required for its personnel. If everybody who teaches school because it's the simplest way of making a living were given a well-funded fellowship to a lifelong research, would they accept? Would they not stop asking, how can I make a living, and start asking, what is it that I love, that I'm interested in? What could I do to help make the world work to some more satisfactory, more interesting point? This used to be a stupid question. It suddenly becomes a very logical one. In 1927, Fuller gave up forever the general dictum of society, that is, that everyone to survive must make a living. He substituted the individual's anti-entropic responsibility in universe. Fuller sought as an individual for the tasks needed to be done no one else was doing or attempting to do, which, if done, would physically and economically help society to eliminate pain. As a consequence, it was necessary for him to discipline his imaginings, invent and develop technical and scientific capabilities, innovative problem solutions, synergetics. He found design strategy for universe, humanity, children, advantaging the new life, the new intelligence, doing more with less, ephemeralization. Fuller's revolution is his plan to change not man, but man's environment. Basque friend Esther Ferrer replied by fax. I knew her as artist, anarchist. I had asked about anarchy's future. Anarchy will always have a future and a present, she wrote, because it's associated with creativity. I don't mean art, which is something else. I talk of creativity in the sense that it comes from rejoicing, from pleasure, serving first of all the person who practices it, unconditioned by obligations to anyone else. There is no master except oneself. Anarchy, like creativity, is thus a completely gratuitous choice which engages only yourself and which you decide to practice. One could well define anarchy as a practice of liberty. One can practice it without others being at all interested. It does not take away from one's own joy. That is, anarchistic thought is something out of time, even without time. I would even dare to say something anchored in human nature. There are other things anchored in human nature, unfortunately, and like creativity, individualistic and individualized. This is the source of its attractiveness and enormous risk. It is particularly attractive in periods as today of loss of spirit, loss of hope. There isn't or doesn't seem to be messianic hope to stuff our heads with. There is a return to essential things, never far away, because we can find them inside ourselves without needing recourse to ideologists are master thinkers, without needing to think outside ourselves, our liberties limited only by the consideration we give others as beings who also practice liberty. Anarchy is quite simply a problem of assuming individual responsibility. It is the idea that each person conceive of himself as an intelligent being capable of making his life decisions without delegating his decision-making capacities to someone else, whether a god, king, state, party, ingenious artist, master of thought, mother or father. Esther says, after all, anarchy really does have the future people are talking about. It is creative conduct as opposed to subordinate conduct. It is positive individualism to follow a way of thinking that proposes you can assume for your own acts responsibility, visibly responsible, first to yourself and then to society. After the unworkability of capitalism, Marxism, authoritarian socialism, anarchy seems for man's liberation to be a possibility once again. As Jorge Oriza said to me, from failure to failure, right up to the final victory. I think now of Marshall McLuhan. The world has become a single mind. We have extended the central nervous system. Electronics, our technology, makes the revolution for us. We can change our minds. We share only one, the planet. The planet has become a single person. It is a question of rolling off a log. Conduct, creative. Conduct from failure to failure. Anarchy. It promises nothing. Mind, up to the final victory. Creative mind. A couple of questions. I don't know whether I could answer them, but I could respond to them if you have them. Pardon? Repeat what? The question is.
You're asking us questions.
Okay, that's the one I asked, or someone asked me. I don't have any prepared answers.
Anyone care to give an answer to a question that John Cage? Let's hear from someone. You can also ask a question. Yes.
I just want to know if you have a mental image of what a world without art
Of what?
A world without art. What would it be like?
It's a remark of Jasper Johns. And we were in a car slowly leaving the Museum of Modern Art. And he looked at it quite seriously and said, I can imagine a world without art. And he said, it wouldn't be bad. I myself enjoy very much what I mentioned in this talk, the sounds of traffic. And I live on Sixth Avenue in New York. So that my enjoyment of sound is fully satisfied without my writing music. At the same time, I have more commissions to do that than I think I've ever had. And I have more access to performances so that I continue working. I don't quite understand.
In relation to 92, questioning like the past and making that past part of our new future, how do you feel recharging it or analyzing it or taking it?
I think in all the various ways that people will think of. I would not be the only person doing it. All of us will be doing it. And the past won't be forgotten. It's one of the black permanent emotions, according to Indian thought, aesthetic thought, and its movement should be toward tranquility. It can be combined with the other emotions, black or white, but the movement should be toward tranquility, which is without color. I think I won't be able to answer these questions. I have tried to make to bring together my thoughts that are of an optimistic nature. And I have been unhappy in recent times with conversation and what I read and so forth, that is so gloomy and that is so hopeless. So I brought together something that could give us reasons for hope as much as I could.
In the time we have left, let's listen to an arbitrary bit of Cage's Alla Ricerca del Silenzio Perduto from 1978, specifically the start of the excursion that travails Bologna to Riola to Poretta back to Bologna. You'll hear people milling about on the train track, boarding the train against announcements from the Italian railroad personnel, and intermittent sounds of musicians as they perform in a rambling train that's been performed into a circus. This truly is a prepared train. The recording is from a beautiful compilation from Baskerville, released in 2008. 3 CDs, one for each excursion, 1 DVD with conversations about the work, all encased in a beautiful hardbound book which documents the event in various texts and many, many photographs. For specific information about how to find this book, please take a look at our broadcast page. Enjoy.
That's very soft.
No, thanks.
Is that one? Oh, this is zero. Zero. And this is one. Oh, I designed the store.
Thank you. preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.